The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
Well, it finally happened. The Lakers this season have lost 2 games in a row, and now they have plummeted down the Western Conference rankings. Plummeted, I say. All the way down to the number 3 spot behind the Utah Jazz. An 8-game winning streak will do that. And the rival Los Angeles Clippers. The good news is that all 3 of these teams have 14 wins apiece. So there's plenty of time to right the ship and get back atop the Western Conference. The bad news is that one of these back-to-back losses came against the Philadelphia 76ers, who are on top of the Eastern Conference, so a potential NBA Finals matchup did not go the Lakers' way, unfortunately. Now, back-to-back losses aren't really the big deal they seem to be, at least aren't as big a deal as this Lakers team is making them out to be. As great a goal as not losing back-to-back games an entire season is, it's pretty unfeasible. And even last season, despite the fact that the Lakers went on to win the championship, they lost back-to-back games on 3 different occasions last season. So it's definitely not the end of the world. They even lost 4 straight at one point in December last season. So back-to-back losses on the road, especially when one of them is missing Anthony Davis, it's definitely not the end of the world. While the loss against the Sixers was disappointing, it wasn't without its various good signs. Second loss in a row versus the Pistons was disappointing in that they had an okay first half. LeBron came out on fire. Second half completely gave away the game, and just a terrible second half that was obviously playing down to the competition. A waste of a great LeBron James first half in which he went 4-for-4 from the 3-point line, only to end up 4-for-8 for the game. But playing down to the competition is human nature. There's a lot of NBA games even in this shortened 72-game season. And that, and like I said, no Anthony Davis doesn't help things versus Detroit, because Blake Griffin went off against the Lake Show. And so did Derrick Rose. Yeah, high-scoring guards continue to be an issue for this Lakers team, which doesn't necessarily bode well against an opponent like Brooklyn, although Brooklyn is really terrible defensively, and so I don't think you have to worry too much about an NBA Finals matchup there. But yeah, I mean, it does tend to point to looking at the other teams in the West. Houston with John Wall, and now with Victor Oladipo. Portland is always going to have CJ and Dame. Yeah, there's some high-scoring backcourts out there. Phoenix with Devin Booker. Utah, as we mentioned, is on top of the Western Conference right now. They've got Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell. Opposing backcourts, really good ones, could be a problem potentially for this team. And so there are definitely some things that need to be addressed via trade, but we'll get to that later. In searching the box scores for both of these games, one thing does kind of stand out in particular, and that's KCP. For all of the praise that's been lapped upon KCP lately for his play, and his play has been insanely great in both of these games against Philadelphia and then against Detroit, KCP went off for 3 points versus Philadelphia, 6 points versus Detroit, didn't make any threes in either of those 2 games, didn't get very many of the peripheral stats that we like seeing from him. Versus Detroit had a minus 20 plus minus versus Philadelphia. He was plus 1 versus Philadelphia. And Philadelphia, for all I've talked about that game, we'll focus on that game now. It was a 1-point loss. And the Lakers did kind of come back in that fourth quarter and made it a game. And so, yeah, the Detroit loss is the Detroit loss. They played down to the competition. There's not a whole lot to talk about there. Detroit's going nowhere, and everyone, including the Lakers, know it, and they played like it. But yeah, the Philadelphia game, KCP, 3 points I misspoke. He did shoot 1-for-2 from three. Got three rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. But so that was one of his better games, although you definitely would like to see more points out of KCP. The bench was definitely disappointing against Philadelphia. 3 points out of Kyle Kuzma. Definitely got to do better than that. His scoring is down, as we've talked about ad nauseum this season. His rebounding is up. But against Philadelphia, Philadelphia's a really big team. You definitely need more than simple rebounding, to play against Philly. And Philadelphia did kind of expose another problem with this Los Angeles Lakers defense. And fortunately, it's a problem that, I mean, there aren't many examples of this. You saw a little bit of it versus Cleveland with Andre Drummond, but Joel Embiid. So this Lakers defense has a little bit of a problem with high scoring backcourts. And they apparently have a problem with generational big men like Andre Drummond and Joel Embiid. Fortunately, there are only two players in the NBA that are like Joel Embiid and Andre Drummond, and it's Joel Embiid and Andre Drummond. So Joel Embiid in this game, he's on an MVP campaign similar to LeBron. 28 points in this game for Joel Embiid. 2 blocks, 4 assists, 6 rebounds. Shot 11 for 13 from free throw. 11 for 13. As great as Marc Gasol is fundamentally, defensively, yeah, against an Andre Drummond, against a Joel Embiid, maybe even against a Nikola Jokic, he's going to be too slow. He's just not going to be effective against centers like that. And it could end up being a problem, as Joel Embiid was definitely a problem this one. Joel Embiid also kind of exposed the fact that not only could Marc Gasol not fare well against centers like Joel Embiid or Andre Drummond, neither can Montrezl Harrell. Montrezl Harrell entered into this game, I believe, having hit double digits in pretty much every game this season. Against Philadelphia, played 14 minutes, 45 seconds, didn't score a single point, which is definitely unusual for Montrezl. Even more unusual, grabbed 1 rebound. So in almost 15 minutes of play, Montrezl put up 1 field goal, grabbed 1 rebound, did get 3 steals, but he also fouled 4 times. So really important to this Lakers team is the second unit. And if the second unit is nullified, if Kyle Kuzma is going to give you 3 points off the bench, if Montrezl is going to give you nothing off the bench, you can't really rely too much on Talen Horton-Tucker yet. Same for Markieff Morris. Caruso had a really good game against Philadelphia. Caruso's going to have his moments, definitely. Caruso's actually playing outstanding this season in the limited minutes that he gets. But against a deep team like Philly, against a team like Brooklyn, you're going to need the second unit to step up. Because teams like that, the Lakers starters are going to nullify each other versus their opponent. They're going to do that against Brooklyn. They're going to do that against Philly. Did that against Milwaukee. So it's going to be the second unit that has to shine for this Lakers unit. And chief to that has got to be Kyle Kuzma. But beyond that, yeah, Montrezl can't be turning in games of 0 points. You just can't. It's hard to use the word unacceptable, but yeah, that's basically what that performance from Montrezl Harrell was. It was unacceptable versus Philadelphia. But like I said, it's not really to his fault. Joel Embiid is who he is. He's a generational big. There's not really anybody like him in the league except for maybe an Andre Drummond, and thankfully there's only two of those guys. Would have been nice to see Ben Simmons held a little bit more. He had a triple-double of 17, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. He also got a steal and a block. Shot 8 for 15. He doesn't shoot outside the lane very much, and so as a point guard, it should be easy to kind of limit his points. What you want to do with Ben Simmons is you want to limit his opportunity for assists. You want to limit his opportunity to make the offense run. And so, granted, he is a 6'10" tall point guard, and it's really hard to stop a 6'10" tall point guard from rebounding, but you've got to find a way to stop him from rebounding, because when he rebounds, he goes. And as he goes, this Philadelphia team goes. It also didn't help that the revenge narrative sort of seemed to motivate Danny Green to play a really great game. He shot 4 for 9 from 3 to the tune of 14 points for the game. Would have been really nice if Danny Green could shoot that way in the NBA Finals, but that is in the past. We're not going to worry about it. Tobias Harris also had a really great game at 24 points. As bad as the Lakers were, this Lakers second unit was offensively. Defensively, they did hold the Sixers pretty well. Their highest scorer off the bench was Shake Milton with 9 points, and you got Furkan Korkmaz with 8, and that's pretty much all you got out of the Philadelphia 76ers second unit. So, yeah, I think in a 7-game series, as it's going to come down to really any opponent this season, if the Lakers remain healthy in a 7-game series, I don't see how this type of result, a 1-point loss against the 76ers, is a repeatable thing for Philadelphia. It seems as though, given the opportunity, the Lakers would absolutely outshine in the 7-game series, especially looking at the fact that they shot 8 for 24 from 3. They've been shooting better than that this season. 16 for 25 from the free throw line. That was a problem last season. They won the championship. Continues to be a problem this season. Shooting, missing way too many free throws. Especially Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis this season, for whatever reason, shooting 71.1% from the free throw line, which isn't a bad percentage. But you figure he's gone as high as 85% from the free throw line before. He shot 85% last year. He's an 80% shooter the year before that in New Orleans. He's a career 80% free throw shooter. For him to shoot 71% this season, I maintain that free throws are all kind of, it's all in between the years. And I think for some people it's going to be an Achilles heel, like it is for LeBron James. For whatever reason, dude can't shoot free throws in certain situations, and it's frustrating, but it is what it is. Anyway, back to the box score. I don't think in a 7-game series this is too much to worry about. There's plenty of good things here to see. They shot pretty well from the field, had a good offensive rating, didn't have a very good defensive rating, but I think defense is one of those things that is all about effort. And, you know, when it comes to playoff time, LeBron James does kind of step up his game a little bit. And, yeah, I think a 34-point game is kind of more what you'd see from him throughout the playoffs. And if he's going to be doing that game to game, it's hard to stop this Lakers team. So for the Pistons, yeah, most of this game was basically playing down to the competition. They played a really great first half. LeBron started out 4 for 4 from 3, like I said. Ended up 4 for 8, shot 8 for 19 for the game, 22 points. Was tied with Kyle Kuzma, who started in place of Anthony Davis for that 22-point scoring lead. Kyle Kuzma also grabbed 10 rebounds, so it was a great game for him. He tends to play pretty well when he does start. I've kind of made the argument that if you could convince Anthony Davis to just be the center, the Lakers would be in a position where they could start Kyle Kuzma alongside KCP and Dennis Schroeder, to which you've now got a front scoring court of Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Kyle Kuzma, and you've got a defensive-focused backcourt in Dennis Schroeder and KCP. Now, that does kind of decimate the second unit, and Marc Gasol has almost no place in that second unit. So I think to take him out of the starting lineup would basically eliminate his role altogether, which I've been on record saying I wasn't 100% a fan of the Marc Gasol signing. It's been a little bit better offensively than I thought it would. He actually plays a really good two-man game with LeBron. Anytime he gets the ball up in the high court, look for back cuts and layups. He does that really well with Schroeder and KCP. Although teams are starting to kind of pick up on that when, as soon as Gasol gets the ball in the high court, he's looking to pass almost immediately. And I think as teams pick that up, that's also going to nullify his role a little bit. So the Lakers are in a position where I think decisions need to be made. The trading deadline is coming up. It still isn't until April. And so I think there's definitely time to kind of figure out what they can do with this unit, what pieces they can move around, what might be available come buyout deadlines. It's just a little disheartening seeing how well DeMarcus Cousins is playing in Houston, seeing how JaVale is playing in Cleveland. JaVale is having absolutely really great season in Cleveland. Let's take a look at JaVale's numbers here real quick. So JaVale McGee this season in Cleveland, 8.2 points a game, 6 rebounds, is blocking 1.1 shots in about 16 minutes, which is about what he played last season. So last season in Los Angeles, JaVale played 16.6 minutes per game, almost exactly what he's playing in Cleveland now. But in Cleveland, he's scoring 8 points a game versus the 6. And so basically, he's putting up similar numbers. Almost the same amount of rebounds. He's getting more assists in Cleveland. And he's blocking almost the same number of shots. So what you're seeing in Cleveland from JaVale is basically what you saw in LA. And he's having a really good impact for Cleveland. And Cleveland is at the point where they do have 3 centers. It does unfortunately look like they're going to trade Andre Drummond. And so they're probably going to need to hold on to JaVale, which is unfortunate. Yeah, Lakers fans. Basically what I'm saying is I feel like we took JaVale McGee for granted. As unfortunate as that is to say, as crazy as that is to say, JaVale is he's definitely an underappreciated gem out there. He has been his entire career.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
We miss him. But back to the Detroit game. So, yeah, no Anthony Davis. Kyle Kuzma started, had a pretty good game. Better game from Montrez. Outstanding game from Talen Horton-Tucker. Played 14 minutes, put up 13 points, shot 3 threes. A couple of really good highlights. Talen is going to find spots where he's going to excel. They're not going to be that plentiful, those spots. But he's definitely coming on. And I think come playoff time, his minutes will be limited, but I think he's going to come on at times and do really great things. But yeah, for the most part, not a whole lot to look for in this box score. The Lakers played down to the competition, like I said. Second half was just terrible. 2 points in the second half for LeBron. 13 in the second half for Kyle Kuzma. A lot of that came in the garbage time. Kind of screwed my daily fantasy lineup last night. As great as it was to see Kyle Kuzma play as a Lakers fan, as a DFS player, he did kind of take some money out of my pocket. But as I tend to do, I tend to look at things that are not replicable. And, I mean, not like this Detroit team is anything to worry about down the road, but 14 points in the second half of Blake Griffin, that's not happening a lot throughout the season. It happened last night versus the Lakers. It is where it is. 8 points in the second half from Derrick Rose off the bench. It's not always going to happen. Derrick Rose, another guy that Lakers fans were just clamoring for last year, hoping Detroit would buy him out. Same thing again this year. Detroit is going absolutely nowhere. Nowhere. And you've got Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose eating up a lot of salary. And especially now that you've got Jeremy Grant there, this is kind of where the Detroit's future should focus, on Jeremy Grant, Josh Jackson, those young guys. You definitely don't need a Derrick Rose. You don't need a Blake Griffin, but Blake Griffin's price tag is probably pretty high at this point. But let's move on to another Lakers storyline this season. An absolutely positive one. One that I've been waiting for a long time. LeBron James is firmly midway through the season. Well, a little bit earlier than midway through the season. Early in the season. We're just a month after the season started. LeBron James is firmly in the MVP conversation. Finally. As he should always be, firmly in the MVP conversation. 25.5 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, 7.5 assists. Now, he led the league in assists last year. That was absolutely great to see. Clearly, that seemed to hurt his impact as an MVP nominee. He was ended up being one of the finalists towards once the season was said and done, but there wasn't this narrative throughout the season, despite the fact that the Lakers were always atop the Western Conference. There was never really this discussion of whether or not he could be the MVP, not until the last few weeks of the season. And so here we are, 20 games into the season. LeBron hasn't missed a game. He's playing less minutes, but still putting up really similar numbers to times that he's won MVP. So yeah, the assists are down, but the rebounds are consistent. And I mean, the assists are really consistent for what he's done throughout his entire season. For his career, he's 7.4 assists. This season, he's 7.5. For his career, he's 7.4 rebounds. This season, he's 7.8. Now, as for career, he is 27 points per game, and this year he's 25.5, but his numbers are also down nearly 5 minutes. So, for missing 5 minutes per game, on the average, he's only scoring 2 points less than what he usually has throughout his entire career. So in year 18, LeBron is, I mean, he's just outstanding. He is having his absolute best season ever shooting threes. He's shooting threes at 41.7%, which is insane. He's putting up 6.6 threes per game, which is far more than he's ever put up. The second most he's put up was last season, which he put up 6.3, but he shot 35% from the three-point line. This year, he's almost 3 for 7 per game. The fact that he's putting up so many threes is just crazy. Free throws, free throw percentage is pretty consistent with what he's been throughout his career, down a little bit from his entire career. But the narrative is just as crazy as it always is. You know, there's Joel Embiid. Like I said, Joel Embiid is a pretty legitimate MVP candidate. Philadelphia is on top of the Eastern Conference. Joel's played 15 games so far this season. He's putting up 27.7 points, so two more than LeBron, getting more rebounds at 11.1. 2.8 assists. He's obviously not going to get as many assists as LeBron. Defensively, he's having a really good impact. 1.2 steals per game, 1.4 blocks. He's also shooting 40% from three, but he shoots a lot less than LeBron does. And Joel Embiid, for being a seven-footer, is a really good free-throw shooter. So, yeah, Joel Embiid is a legitimate MVP candidate. I think when it boils down to things like he's missed a couple of games this season. LeBron's played 20 to Joel's 15. That, I think, matters. Joel is getting defensive intangibles and steals and blocks. But LeBron, statistically, doesn't look like he's having a good defensive season. But analytically, when you factor in, we talked about this last episode, when you factor in that players shooting against him are shooting roughly 30%, which is tops in the league for defense, I think LeBron analytically is having a really good defensive year, probably close to the year in which he finished second in Defensive Player of the Year voting. Another MVP candidate that people are talking about that just boggles my mind, and it's one of those things where a few weeks ago I joked about how was the goalpost going to move for LeBron in the MVP narrative this season. And because it's always something. Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the first time in his career. Give him the MVP. Does it a second year in a row, isn't even considered for the MVP. Because they moved the goalpost. Suddenly that year, averaging a triple-double didn't matter. You know, you always hear about, you know, winning. Winning matters. Giannis is the two-time MVP largely because Milwaukee has been the best regular season team in the NBA. James Harden always garners MVP consideration because of how well he plays in the regular season, in which he really just plays well, super well, during January. So this year, Nikola Jokic, the Denver Nuggets are nowhere near as good as they were last season. They've had some injuries, they've had some players out due to COVID, health and safety protocols, all that sort of stuff. Denver's 11-7. They currently sit fourth in the West, and so they're definitely not towards the bottom, but they don't have a better record than the Lakers. They don't have a better record than Philadelphia. And with all that being said, Nikola Jokic is garnering some MVP consideration. Now, his numbers are definitely more impressive. You factor in, he's averaging 25.2 to LeBron's 25.5. He's averaging 8.9 assists per game to LeBron's 7.5. And he's averaging 11.8 rebounds to LeBron's 7.4. So yeah, his numbers overall are better. And he's played 18 games. I think he might have missed one or two. And so, yeah, if Denver finishes as a top three seed in the West, I could see him being a legit MVP candidate. Probably wouldn't even really be mad if he won. But man, this is just me personally. I don't like Jokic's game. He's a great passer, but he's not very athletic, not very quick. He doesn't have a complete game. While he gets a lot of rebounds, gets some steals, gets some blocks, I don't think defensively he has the overall impact that LeBron's been having this season. And so, yeah, to look at it as purely from a numbers standpoint, sure, Jokic can get some consideration for MVP, and so can Joel Embiid. But I think you factor in how well LeBron's playing at his age. If the Lakers do end up with the best record in the league, or at the very least, tops in the West, I've got to figure that matters more. And I feel like the media, if they are going to go by narratives or if they are going to go by things like that, I feel like the media has messed up in the last couple of years giving Harden so much consideration, because clearly the guy's not an MVP. He's been a locker room problem this whole time. He gets MVP consideration because of how well he plays in January. That's my opinion. But I am a biased LeBron fan, so I just do feel like he deserves the MVP consideration every season. Let's see. I wrote in my notes Kuzma update, but we kind of went over that a little bit. He played great when he started against Detroit. Didn't play very good when he came off the bench against Philadelphia. He's getting a lot of rebounds, but that's really about it. Kyle Kuzma is – his role seems to be solidified in that he's a defensive oriented player whose focus is rebounds, and he can score when he gets open shots, but he shouldn't really look for open shots, and he's not really running the offense when he's in there. And so, you know, his role is to be instinctive and react and not really to make decisions and run the offense. So a decent week for Kyle Kuzma, not a great week, but they're not asking much out of him, and he's delivering what they're asking, so that's good. So we've gone over some of the standings. Let's just end the show by going over the standings as we usually do. So, yeah, as we mentioned, 1, 2, and 3 in the West, all 14 wins apiece. Utah, Clippers, Lakers, Denver number 4, like we talked about. San Antonio 5, they moved up a little bit at 10-8. Memphis, surprisingly pretty high. Ja Morant's having a really good season. Memphis at 7-6. Phoenix and Portland are tied for that 7 seed at 9-8. You've got Golden State nipping at the Trailblazers and Suns' heels at 10-9. Guessing the tiebreaker is what puts them in that 9th spot. Houston and OKC are tied at 8-9 for the 10 spot. Dallas in that 12 spot. Dallas was supposed to be a really good team, and they are a really good team defensively, but they have got a mountain to climb if they think they're going to get into the playoff picture. And speaking of that MVP race, at this point, Luka is all but out with an 8-10 record. Don't see him really coming back into the MVP conversation, unfortunately. He'll be an MVP at some point, just not quite yet. Sacramento at 7-10, they're the worst defensive team in history. They will end up being the worst team in the league. Do not worry about them being in the 13th seed. New Orleans at 6-10. I don't think Stan Van Gundy is going to last the season. If he does last the season, he's going to be fired in the summer once the season ends. He doesn't seem to be a good mix for this New Orleans team, and they were already talking about trading Lonzo and or J.J. Redick, which they should. They should find a way to trade or buy out J.J., and then he can come to the Lakers. Anyway, Minnesota at 4-13. They might end up being the worst team in the West behind Sacramento. They're just not good. Carl Anthony Towns has missed a lot of time. He got injured early in the season, and then he unfortunately tested positive with COVID, and he has been out with that for a little while, and so we'll wait for him to come back. But Minnesota not having a great season this season. I don't think Anthony Edwards, he might be fine for a little while. I don't think he's going to end up being a great pick for that team. Out in the East, we've got Philadelphia tops, like we said, 13-6. Milwaukee and Indiana, both with 11 wins apiece. Milwaukee 2, Indiana 3. Brooklyn starting to come up, 12-8 with that 4 seed. Boston at 10-7. They were the top in the East at one point and falling down a bit. Cleveland continues to be a super fun team to watch. They're 9-9. Those quirky kids in Cleveland: Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Chetty Osman. Chetty Osman, one of LeBron's favorites. Another guy I hope to see in a Laker uniform one day, Chetty Osman. Atlanta at 9-9 in that 6 seed, tied for the 8th. You've got Orlando and the Knicks, surprisingly, at 8-11. The Knicks, another fun, surprising team out East. Very young, play with a lot of hunger, play with a lot of energy. Elfrid Payton is having a really good season for the Knicks. Bulls at 7-10, Charlotte 7-11, Toronto at 7-11 are tied for the 11th seed. Miami, don't know what happened to Miami. They've had some injuries. They've had some players out. COVID has kind of run rampant through the league, and I think one of the teams they've affected is Miami at 6-12. Detroit, one of the worst teams in the league, although they beat our Lakers at 5-14, and then Washington at 3-11. You know what? Washington might actually be the worst team in the league. Washington, Sacramento, Minnesota. Those are your worst three teams in the league. Washington, Sacramento, Minnesota. Get Brad Beal out of there. Just don't send him to the Clippers. With that, you can follow me on Twitter at JCDillion1. You can follow the show on Twitter at HoopBallLakers. Follow Ethan on Twitter at Ethan_Noroff with one F. If you're into sports gambling, follow HoopBall Gaming. HoopBall Gaming is only $10 a month, and I'm a subscriber. They hand out really great picks daily. Pretty good return on your investment if you just stick with them and follow the plan. Listen to those guys when they tell you how many units to bet and things like that. Follow those instructions and you'll end up doing pretty well for yourself. But with that, I'm your host, JC DeLeon, and we are out.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now. Save big money.